the first year altogether here, but Parshat Tezria Metzora. So I will tell you, I've got some really crazy lines over here that is some really crazy stories that I start off with. It starts off with Yidavar Hashem Moshe Lemur, Dabro Bnei Yisrael Lemur, Isha Kisazria V'Yobazachar. You're going to like it, don't worry. A woman that gives birth to a male, the Tama Shibas Yom, she's coming for 7 days, Kimeini Das Vosak Titma. It's so strange. We're talking about a Yoledis, a person that gives birth, a Parsha of Saras. And this Yoledis, this person that gives birth, becomes Tame. For a male child, if she has a boy, then she's going to be for 7 days, and then there's 40 days altogether, etc. For a girl, it's going to be 14 days, and then 80 days afterwards. So it's just strange. Here's the strange part. Why would somebody, at the end of Yoledis, after giving birth to a baby, you'd think that that is the greatest of Kedusha that a person can do in this world, to bring about a child in this world? If you've been present at a childbirth, you know. If you haven't, you might have heard from people. It is a great feeling to think that a person was able to, there was nothing there, wasn't there, and everything like that. Birth. Four times. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I'm watching. I can't even watch, really. I'm like looking at this wall. I'm like, it's great. That's all it is. That's all you got. But how in the world, and we know that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is there by every birth. The key to giving birth, the key to Leda, is that Kadosh Baruch Hu himself, he's the one that has the key. No one else has that mafter. So the question is, how is it possible that God's deed, something that God does himself, could bring about Tuma? Where does this Tuma come from? How is it possible, something that he did? So what does it mean exactly? So the Alain Lishabach said two different answers. I thought of like quick answers. You know, the baby was in the womb learning a lot of Torah, and now that Torah's gone because, you know, he forgot all of it, so that brings about Tuma. The other answer that he gives, loss of life. What do you mean by loss of life?
The life is coming. It's any time where there's form of
a loss of something.
Okay, fine.
A siluka shechina, right? In other words, the shechina went away at this moment. We know that the shechina is there normally by a birth. When the shechina goes away, that's where tuma comes in. When a person dies, what happens? Tuma comes in because there was tahara and kedusha there. All of a sudden it leaves. Well, what happens? That's when tuma comes in, when somebody passes away. So that's what happens over here as well. That's an easy answer. Kadosh Baruch Hu was with the Oledas. He was sitting there, and then he left. So what happens when God leaves? Tuma comes in.
I was thinking differently. Like, anytime there's a nida or a zero of a tell or any of that stuff, it's something that then creates life and it leaves then the body, then it becomes...
That's a very, very good call. But here's a tremendous lesson. This is the second answer that he gives, and I thought this was an unbelievable lesson that can lead you to a ton of things. The lesson to be learned from this whole parsha is a concept like this. You have a tremendous gift, something that people in this world would give everything they own to have. If somebody isn't Zocha to a child, they would pay, forget about money, they would pay all the money they had in the world, they would give up everything they owned in order to just have the schus to be able to have a child. You are having a child at this moment. Again, I've never been in the position, I've heard it's really hard. Personally, after something like this happens, I always say, like, well, what about me? You know, I was also there. I was also in travails. I had my own issues at that time. Ask me how I'm feeling. You know, that's the selfish part of it. And Rachel does listen, so that works out well. But here's the lesson. While she's there, she's screaming out loud. And sometimes she'll say, God, why did this have to happen to me? God, why did you do this to me? I wish this never would have happened. At a time when she should be thanking God, and I realize the amount of pain and everything else that's involved, but at a time when you can thank God, I have something, or I'm doing something that no one else is Zocha to. There's no one else in this world, not no one else is Zocha to this baby, but there are people in this world that would give everything they own to have do this, and you take such a blessing, and you say your kafui tova, you forget about the goodness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you say, no, I wish this wouldn't happen, I wish that. Even though you're screaming it out loud, that brings about tuma. Not being makir tov in that type of a situation brings about a tremendous amount of tuma. That's what comes at that moment. This is an unbelievable story. The Lenu Shabbat says, I'll give you an example. There was a firm yid who was, he was able to see at the beginning of his life, and he was classified blind. Something happened. I don't know if it meant he couldn't see without very, very thick glasses. He couldn't see at all. It seems like he couldn't see at all. But there was a surgery that he could do to repair the eyesight in his eyes to be able to see. There was something that he could do, but he had to get that surgery. And it was a big surgery. He went to the eye surgeon. The eye surgeon was discussing with him. He was a frum yid. The eye surgeon was not frum. Yeah, I should say yet, because at the very end he was. But the eye surgeon asked him, you know, in the conversation, I'm sorry, but I didn't tell you how. So the eye surgeon said to the firm guy, he said, so what's the first thing you want to see when you get your eyesight back? What's the first thing you want to see? So the guy had a wife and kids and everything like that. But he said his tzitzis. Tzitzis. So the eye surgeon looked at him. I've asked hundreds of people this question, he said. But I've never heard that answer before. Why tzitzis? And he said, because there's a mitzvah of uri'isemoso. And you should see it. So the first thing that I want to look at when I come out of surgery is my tzitzis, so that I can look at the tzitzis and thank God for the fact that there's such a surgeon that's able to let me see my eyes. He saw the quizzical look on the surgeon's face, and he said, it's not that I don't want to see my children, chas v'shalom, or I don't want to see my wife, chas v'shalom, of course I want to see them. But the first thing that I do after I come out from the surgery, the first thing I want to do is thank God. How can I thank God? By using my eyes for the first mitzvah that I can think of. That first mitzvah that I can think of, reason also, to be able to see my tzitzis. The guy, obviously, the non-from Jew, started listening to him and started going or whatever. He ended up becoming a from Jew, and he told this story to Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein of the Land of Shabbat, this non from Yud, how he became from, after he had heard such a line from such a guy. That's a guy who knows what a Karas HaTov is, to thank somebody for what just happened. Here's another one. Rav Gusman, I love this story. Rav Gusman is a Rebbe of one of my Rebbeim, Rebbe Ravel in Beis. Rav Gusman was a genius, a mad genius, a guy who had this head that, like no other. Like, absolutely no other. So one day, his Talmidim song, and he was watering his flowers and his grass. I don't know if you've been in Yerushalayim. There's not much grass in Yerushalayim. Not much of anything. Unless you got some money. There's not much going on there. Like, watering the cement. That's all you got. But there were he had flowers, he had grass. He put, like, a little thing outside of his apartment, and he had this grass and this flowers and all these different things, and he was watering them. So his Talmidim said, Rebbe, come on, you know, we'll take care of this for you. You don't have to do this yourself. We'll do it for you. We'll do it instead. And Gusman said to him, no, I want to do it myself. So he said to him, Rebbe, why? Why do you do this? Why would you water the plants like this? Gusman said, when I was running away from the Nazis in World War II, Rav Gusman, his wife, and one of his children were able to run into a forest. Rav Gusman was 18 years old. He was already on the base in Revolt Chaim Ozer Grudinsky. He was not Stam a Yid. 18 years old, he was a dying with a Garo Ador. On the Gadol Ador's basin. That's Rav Gusman. Rav Gusman, when he ran away, there was one point where Rav Chaim Ozer took him into a forest. He led him into a forest and he told him, this you can eat, this you can't eat. That you can eat, that you can't eat. And he was going through the forest telling him. Rav Gusman had a mind, so he was looking at it, but he was like, why? Well, why is Rebbe telling you this? Well, Rav Chaim Ozer telling me this. And then later on, he was running away from the Nazis, found himself in a forest. He escaped from the Nazis for 3 years. 3 years in a forest. And he lived off of the shoots and the mushrooms and this and that and the other, all the little types of things that were there in the forest. And he knew which ones you could eat, which ones you couldn't eat. And he survived off them. So he said, I have such hakaras hatov to plants and to flowers and to mushrooms that I said that from now on, when I get out from this forest, I am going to water my own lawn. I'm going to take care of my own flowers. I'm going to do everything. That's an idea of hakaras hatov. That's a level of hakaras hatov I don't even understand. For flowers or plants or something that you're growing yourself, that's an unbelievable idea of Hakaras HaTov. But by far, the king of Hakaras HaTov, Rav Avigdor Miller. Nobody comes close to Rav Avigdor Miller when it comes to Hakaras HaTov. One time his grandson came in and he saw Rav Avigdor Miller with his head under the faucet. The sink was filled with water and his head was under the faucet in the water, completely in there. It seemed like he was still conscious, so the grandson didn't like pull him out or anything, but he looked at him and just couldn't understand. A couple of seconds later, he saw Rav Avigdor Miller pick up his head and go, like that. Like that. So the grandson looked at him. Rav Avigdor Miller is dripping wet with water coming down his face. He looks over at his grandson. And he's like, I'll bet you want to know what I was just doing. His grandson said, yes. I want to know. What was just going on? So Rav Avigdor Miller said, I was outside. And I heard someone say, he lived in Flatbush, said, I heard someone say that, man, it's I don't know, the air is disgusting today. It's really smoggy. It's like there's all this, like, the gas from cars and all this. It's just, it's disgusting outside today. I can't stand the air outside. So Rav Avigdor Miller said to his grandson, do you know how badly that can affect you? To not thank God for the air that he gives you every single day? To not thank God for that air? I wanted to appreciate air. So I put my head under the water, and I wouldn't let myself breathe. And at the last second before I died, I lifted my head up so that I'd be able to breathe the air and say, thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for the air that you've given me. There's no one like Victor Miller. Absolutely no one like him. But that's the idea. The idea to be Makir Tov in the all places and everywhere that you come up, any type of situation that you have, that's the idea. That's the lesson you're supposed to learn from the Yoledes being mentioned at the beginning of the parsha and why there's Tumah immediately. Okay, so now let's go on to Tsaras. Tsaras does not exist nowadays. We don't have the concept of Tsaras nowadays. There's a big question why. Pardon me for getting a little lumdish on you, but I will quote a Tiferes Yisrael. The Tiferes Yisrael at the beginning of the Mishnayis in Hilchos Negayim, in Mishnayis Negayim, I'm sorry, he mentions that he asked this question to Rabbi Akiva Eger. You should know, by the way, if you're ever learning Mishnayis and you're not sure, if you're not sure about some of these halachos, like some of these, like you're learning Mishnayis, you have no idea how Zav works, or you have no idea how Kalim works, or anything like that, get a Mishnayis with the Tiferes Yisrael in it, and read his Hakdama, his introduction. The Tiferes Yisrael lived about 200 years ago. I forgot what his name is. But he lived about 200 years ago. He wrote an introduction to every Mishnayis that has all the halachos of the Mishnayis that you're about to read, has them all in the beginning. In Shabbos, he goes through everything. And he explains everything you need to know in the Hakdama, in that introduction. If you ever need to know. So in this introduction, he goes through all the different halachos of Tsaras. Then he says, so I asked Rabbi Akiva Eger, when I was younger, I asked him, why don't we have it nowadays? Why don't we just have a Kohen say, it's Tamir Tahor? Because all it's up to is to be able to look at it and say, is that Tsaras or is that not Tsaras? That can't be so hard. If it's not so hard, so let's be able to find a guy who's an expert on Tsaras and these types of sicknesses, and let's go find somebody, and the guy will say, it's Tamir, it's Tahor, or whatever it is. Why can't we do that nowadays? Here's what he says. Rabbi Akiva Eger, first of all, said, I have no teretz that's Ola Aladas. I have no answer that works. That's what Rabbi Akiva Eger said.
There's no chutz l'machana, there's no anything.
Okay, so you don't have the chutz l'machana idea, but you'll still have the idea of, oh, that guy is Tameh. You'll have the coin be able to say if he's Tameh or Tahor. So if you have it.
Korban, though, right?
If you have it, but you won't have a korban. You won't have some of the things, but you'll still be able to tiga lachas of shaving your entire body. You'll be able to that. You'll have some of the lachas. Why not do that? So he says, maybe it's just for that. What happens when a mitzorah becomes Tahor after the tzaras is all gone? He shaves his entire body. That includes payas and your beard. Pay it to your beard with a razor. There's no Norelco over here. There's no question about it's lift and cut. There's nothing. It has to be a razor all over your body. You can have no hairs on your entire body. One hair means you still have Tsaras. You still have the tomb of Tsaras on you. You can't have one hair on you. Well, now, here's the problem. If there would be such a thing as Tsaras nowadays, who would give the Tsaras? Who would say that it's your mitzvah? Who would say your Tumah? Would that guy be?
A Kohen.
A Kohen, right? A Kohen would have to say it. Is anybody here a Kohen? No, nobody.
Oh.
You know why? Because there are no real Kohanim nowadays. There's only a Chazakah. Kohanim have a Chazakah. But there's no actual Kohanim because you're not positive that they're absolutely Kohanim. Why are they not positive? You gotta go with Rove. Are they positive that their fathers are really their fathers? Not positive. You can't be completely sure. You're pretty positive.
You got the same question. You're 100%
positive. 100%. But by the base of Mikdash, you have Dil Raisas going. And you definitely have Tsaras. And you know that these things work. And at least you have more of a robe. You'll still have more of a robe. Here, all you got is a Chezkas Kehuna. We assume that they're Kohanim. You don't have to kick them out. If they go up and they want to do Birkos Kohanim, you don't have to kick them out. By pitting up end, you have to do the best that you possibly can. You have to do some type. But all we have is a Chazkas Kuna. Says this Pharisee Yisrael, that Chazaka out of a Suffolk is not enough to make you be over on two Isuri Del Raisa, possibly seven, of cutting your beard with a razor and cutting your payas with a razor. To be over on a Del Raisa, you can't just do that. That's not going to work. There's no way you're going to be able to do that. And aside from that, by Tsaras of Begadim and Tsaras Batim, things like that, that also might not work. There's all these different types of things that might not work, and that's the problem why we don't have Tsaras nowadays, says it's very strong. But there's a Medrash Lakach Tov, and this is probably something that you've heard. You probably heard this before, and you probably, as soon as I asked the question, you probably said, wait a second, isn't there a Medrash? The Medrash says, Medrash Lakach Tov, the Rabbi Yochanan says, remember that name, Rabbi Yochanan, says, Mishacharav Beis HaMikdash Ein Negayim Ein Tumas Negayim. When the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, Negayim don't exist anymore. It's gone. Why? There's no closeness to God. The whole closeness to God that we had where Kadosh Baruch Hu was doing stuff for us or helping us or whatever it is, it's all gone. Once the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, it's all gone. So the Gemara, what you can say on that, and what everybody says on that, is that it just doesn't even happen. Have you ever seen a person get that white mark on their skin that goes down? Leprosy we have, black scabs on your skin. Have you ever seen a white spot on a person's skin? I've never even heard of a person having this. Although, there is a sickness I forgot what it's called, that applies only to Jews. It's a skin disease that only applies to Jews. It doesn't apply to non-Jews. There was an Arab woman who had it once. She was in Israel, and she went to a certain doctor. I forgot where I saw this. It was in one of these magazines that has, like, random tidbits of information. Could have been, like, Hamodia, Mishpacha, I don't know, whatever it was. But it had, this one lady went in, she was an Arab woman. And they checked it, and they said, wow, you have the skin disease of the Jews. How could that be? And they did some research, and they found out her mother was a Jew. Her mother was a Jew, so that's why she was able to have the skin. There are skin diseases that only apply by Jews, but the white thing, it doesn't necessarily apply. True story. I just wish I could get you, you know, where it is.
How come nobody else can get it?
I had no idea. I don't know. We're Jews. We're awesome. We rock. I think that's the answer. I think that's all I can tell you. I will tell you though that Reb Chaim Kanievsky also says that Maros require a bucky, and there are no experts nowadays because nobody knows. Maros Nida, you can go to a Rebbe, and Nida keeps happening, so you can tell the differences. By these Maros Nagayim, you have absolutely no idea. That's another easy answer. I got a problem. Anybody here do brachos? Anybody here done brachos? Done brachos before? Hayamud Beis? Anybody know a statement of Rebbe Yochanan has to do with Saras? Anybody remember it? It's a killer. Rebbe Yochanan. Everybody knows when Rebbe Yochanan lived? Way after the Beis Hamikdash, right? He's in Amora. He's a Talmud of Rav. Rav is a Talmud of Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi. Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi is a Talmud of Reb Meir. Reb Meir is a Talmud of Rebbe Akiva. Rebbe Akiva lived, could have seen the Beis Hamikdash. Maybe he saw the end of the second Beis Hamikdash. We're talking way down, Rebbe Yochanan. Rebbe Yochanan said the following line in Hamad Beis, Amar Rebbe Yochanan, Nigayim Ubanim Einan Yisurin Shalava. So Ras and lack of children are not a Yisurin of Abba. That is not considered a Yisurin Shalava. The Gemara asks, Nigayim, they are Yisurin Shalava. The Gemara says, "Kol miyish mi sheyesh bo echad mi dalid maros negayim halalu." Anybody who has any of those four negayim that are mentioned in Tasriya Mitzora is an Amorite statement. It's by Rav Yochanan. Anybody who has any one of these things, in Elon is that kapara. It's considered a kapara. If you get it, you're good. You don't have to worry about anything in your life. Everything's good. That's Yisurin Shalava. It's good to have these types of things. And the Gemara answers, "Halan the halahu." It depends where you are. In Babel, it's Yisurin Shalava, it's a good kapara. In Eretz Yisrael, what happens? There are walled cities. What happens if you're in a walled city and you have tzaras? Yeah. You're kicked out. That's not Yisurin Shalava. That's a bad Yisurin. That means you spoke Lashon Hara. But I understand, if it's in the times of Rabbi Yochanan, and we're still talking about Negayim, and there's statements being made about Negayim, I thought they don't exist. How could it exist in the time of Rabbi Yochanan? And we're talking about Babel and Eretz Yisrael. We're talking about Negayim in Babel and Eretz Yisrael. So does tzaras exist or does tzaras not exist? Reb Chaim Kanievsky is the only person who can ask this type of a shaila. You know what Reb Chaim Kanievsky answered? There's a Seder Olam that says Rabbi Yochanan lived for 300 years. 300 years. So he says, I could say it in either way. I was thinking that he was making a statement when he was still during the times of the Beis HaMikdash. Reb Chaim Kanievsky says he himself was a Baki. And he saw the Maros Nagayim himself. So he lived where? Where did he live? Where did Rabbi Yochanan live? He wrote the Talmud Yerushalmi. He lived in Eretz Yisrael. If he lived in Eretz Yisrael and he wrote the Talmud Yerushalmi, that means that he held that Negayim is not Yisurin Shalava. Because he would have to kick somebody outside of the city. So Rabbi Yochanan was holding, because he still held of Tzaras, that Tzaras still existed in his days, and he was able to see it because he was an expert, because he saw what it was like back in the times of the Beis Hamikdash. He could kick you out, so he held it wasn't Yisurin Shalava. You hear the question that comes after this, though? Rabbi Leo Nun asked, Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky, if that's so, Rabbi Yochanan had a sister that married Reish Lakish. Who would marry a 250-year-old woman? Who would do that? Like Rabbi Yochanan sitting in the river, he's 300 years old, right? 250 years old maybe. Reish Lakish goes up and says, "While your beauty is for woman," Rabbi Yochanan says, "I have a sister." Like, okay, how old is she? Like, okay, how could that be? That's part of the whole kasha. There are Rabbi Yochanan's statements that argue on Tanayim. That's part of where the Seder Olam gets it from. What?
That also means that he was beautiful at 25 years old.
He had that beauty that shone. But remember, Rabbi Yochanan never had a beard. So his beauty looked like a woman's beauty because he never had a beard. He was a clean-shaven guy. Clean-shaven guy just looked like woman, according to the
Quran. Why is it so strange for her to be beautiful at 250 if he was beautiful?
I guess you have to say that. I think there might be a difference between a woman at 250 and a man at 250. Like, guys keep...
Not if he doesn't have a beauty.
Probably not, like, yeah, maybe. It's probably not, like, good-looking. It's probably, like...
It's a different shine.
So.
It's something. Yeah, there's got to be something a little bit different. It is a little bit different. I will tell you, there's another answer.
Wait, what did Reb Chaim Kanievsky answer?
Oh, he answered that she was born at her... Rabbi Yochanan's father lived for a long time also, and he had a child... at the very end of his life, and that was the daughter, and she was very young. Classic answer of mine. You gotta love that. This is like, it's a crazy question. I just love the question. Revolson says another answer. If you haven't heard from this, if you haven't heard this Revolson, you haven't lived. That it's just, this is like, this is a classic Revolson. He says that Saras is Shayach nowadays. You just don't get Saras. You don't get the white, you don't get the white stuff. What does Saras mean? You gotta kick him out of the Machna. Shiluach mina Machna. You know what Shiluach mina Machna means nowadays? Saras comes from Lashon Hara. If you speak Lashon Hara, that means your mouth is Tameh. A mouth that's Tameh cannot daven. You can't daven correctly. If you can't daven correctly, that means you're kicked out of the Machne. The Machne is a shul. The Machne is a base medrash. If you're not able to daven and your words are not flowing, you're not able to daven in the correct way, that means you have Tzaras, says Rav Wolfson. And that's the pshat, how a person knows whether he has done something wrong or he's spoken Lashon Hara. How's your davening? Are you running through it, not really understanding what you're saying, not really getting it out of it? You come out of davening and you're like, eh, whatever. All right, at least I davened. At least I went in. Then you might have tzaras. That's what Lashon Hara does to you. That if you just can't wait, he also says that you can't even taste Shabbos. If you can't wait for Motzei Shabbos to come, that means you're shiluach min hamachne. You're kicked out of the camp. If you're sitting there saying, Shabbos is going, and you're singing the song, that means you're good. You don't have Saras. But if you're sitting there and you're just saying, okay, 5 minutes until Shabbos is over, you know, whatever, 3 minutes, 2 minutes, and you're sitting there waiting and waiting and waiting, that's when you have Saras. That's the idea of Negayim coming to a person. Okay, I got one more board for you. I mean, this is, it's a three-pronged board. Here's the idea. You know there's a pasuk in the Torah, Kulo afach lavan tahor hu. If the Saras fills your entire body, so that your entire body is white. Kulo hafach lavan. Then that person is tahor. How does that work? You got a spot, your tame. Spots all over your body except for right here. You got clean skin. Tame, absolutely tame. That covers over tahor. Tahor. You're an albino. I mean, what happens? Why in the world do you become tame when it's kulo hafach lavan? The Chofetz Chaim says the famous answer, this is the answer that everybody gives. He gives from Achav, from Ahab, the original Ahab, before captain. From the original Achav, when Achav was told that his sons would all be destroyed, that there would be no one left in his house, even a mashtin bakir, there would be no one left in the house, everybody would be destroyed. Nothing left, according to by Achav. Eliyahu prophesied horrible things for him, Eliyahu Anavi. Achav was nichna, tore his clothing, put sackcloth on, he put on ashes on top of his head, he got down to the ground and he cried, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please save me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, help me, I'm so sorry for everything I did, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please do this, please do that, and everything like that. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Achav, Lo Avia Rab Yamav, because you were nichna in front of me, because you bowed down in front of me, and you said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're the one and I'm sorry for everything I've done, said HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lo Avia Rab Yamav, I'm not going to bring the evil in his days, his sons will be destroyed if they don't follow in this Hachna, and this shiftless, but I'm not going to let it happen. The point of Tzaras, says the Chofetz Chaim, is to knock you down, to literally and figuratively shut you up. You're speaking terrible things. You're saying horrible things to the wrong people. Stop it. That's what Lashon Hara is all about. Throw you down to the ground and say, who are you? What are you saying? Why are you saying these things? That's what Tzaras is supposed to do. That's why no one's allowed near you. You sit by yourself. You got a little hut. You're sitting in that hut. And you just sit there and you say, well, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I'm kicked out of the camp. I have no friends right now. I can't talk to anyone. And there's no phones. There's nothing. No one can visit you. You're bothered Yashem Yichut HaMachana for 7 days. So you could be Mahara and Chuba and heal yourself. And think, what did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? That's true when it seems like it's a mikra, right? When it's only like a small spot in your body. So you think like, it's just a small spot. What's a big deal? So we say, you think that's not a big deal? You got a little spot in your body? You think that's not a big deal? Get outside of the camp. Go inside that tent right now. Go sit there. Because you don't deserve to sit in the camp with everybody else. You're a terrible person. But if your entire body is white, you're gone. You know you've done something wrong. You know you've done something horribly wrong. Because there's no way you could say, well, it's just a coincidence that I turned into an albino. It's just a coincidence that I lost all pigment in my skin. It's not a coincidence. There's something obviously up. You throw yourself down. You worry. What's going on with me? What's happening to me? That's the pshat behind the kol gufo, you're tahor. But here's the problem. That doesn't make you tahor. Okay, maybe you're not tameh, but you're not tahor. Well, how does that make you Tahor? So these parents that had a kid that had that unfortunately had he had cancer. So he was undergoing, you know, he had leukemia. He was undergoing chemotherapy, and while he was going under chemo, he lost all his hair. And I mean, I don't know how this happens, but somehow while he was undergoing chemo, he was so ravaging to his body, he lost his features, meaning everything that he had. He used to be like a bright-eyed, everything, this type of kid. His eyes narrowed, his mouth soured, his nose sagged a little bit. He looked horrible. He looked horrible. And they said it's not a permanent damage, but it's definitely going to last for quite a while, and the hair's gone. And even if he wore something on top of his head, he clearly looked different. So the parents came to Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, the son-in-law of Rav Elyashiv, and said to him, give us some chizuk. You know, just help us out a little. Just tell us, what's going on here? What can we think? What is God trying to do for us? Here's what he says. He told them this whole vort about once it happens, and he says, your child has lost everything. He's kulo afach lavan. Once you come to that point, tahor hu. You've knocked yourself down. You've thought about what you've done, if you've done anything wrong for your child to deserve such a punishment. You've thought about everything. At this point, tahor hu. Tahor hu. You are completely absolved of all of your sins. So listen, nobody should wish this upon anybody else. This is the way to absolve you of your sins. But at least you don't have any sins left. That's what he told the parents. Obviously. But that's what he said, like, there's not much you can do, but shove her up a little. That's all you can do. That's what he means by tahor hu. Do you realize what this type of a disease can do to you? Kula fachlavan, throw you down, throw you under the bus. You're worried about your life every single second. The Panach Raza says it beautifully. If it's all over your skin, what happens when a river widens? It's not very deep. If a river is short, then you know it's pretty deep. But once it widens, there's an area where it's going like this, and then all of a sudden it widens out, and there's a wide space, then you know that it's not very deep in that area. Because the water that's coming from right over here now spread out a little bit. That means the depth of the water must be a little bit higher up. There's no way that it's going to be able to be the same depth as it was over there. The river widening shows you that it's a little bit more shallow. Here's the Panach Raza. It says, if the spot is right there on your skin, then it means that you don't know what's going on underneath. There's something going on underneath your skin that may be affecting you tremendously, and you'll never know. Because you can't tell, you'd have to dig it out and be able to see what's going on underneath your skin. But if it's all over your body, then it must be very shallow. It's only on the outside. That means it's not affecting you on the inside, and there's no danger. There's no danger. That's a crazy line. That's why tahor hu. That's not a problem, because that's not a sakana. That you don't have to worry about. We'll end off with the Rav Schwab. Did you know that how tuma survives in this world? Like, you ever seen a... Where did the fly go to? If you have two things, let's say you have garbage, you know, like literally feces on one side of the table, you have honey on the other. Where will a fly go to? Which one will it go to first?
Feces.
Goes to the honey. The sweetness connects it. Now, what's the reason why? Although you had a 50-50 chance, so it wasn't bad. Don't worry. The next time, it's going to go to the honey. Why? Because it feels something. Every bit of tuma has yanika. It grows. It takes something from purity, from tahara. It raises itself. It becomes something from tahara. And slowly but surely, the tuma dies out if the tahara leaves. If the tahara is all gone, then the tuma has nothing to grow from. So the tuma can't live there anymore. So it just gets out and it goes somewhere else. Whenever you see a line of licking something up, or grabbing something on the ground, or uprooting something from the ground like vegetables, that's referring to tuma growing from tahara. You should know there's secrets when it comes to those things, ramazim when it comes to that. If kulo afach levon, then there's no tuma left. In other words, there's no tahara left, I'm sorry. All you have is tuma on your body? That means the tahara has all left you, which means, memela, what's going to leave you very soon? All of the tuma, because you have no tahara left. So meaning, if kulo afach levon, you have no tahara left, memela, you only have that tuma on you, that tuma is going to leave you, and you are going to be left with only tahara and nothing else. So you know tahor hu, and that's the pshat b'yom Sanhedrin. This is just going to apply for us nowadays. You can make all the remotes you want with this. It doesn't make a difference to me. Centered in Sadi Zayin Aleph. Ein ben David ba, Mashiach only comes, ash tis'apech kol ha-malchus l'minus. If the entire government turns into a bunch of apostates and apikorsim. If the government turns into a bunch of fools that are full of garbage, that's when you know Mashiach's about to come. Why? Shenamar, kulo afach lavan, tahor hu. If it's all Lovan, if you see there's nothing left, it's all garbage, Taru, do you know everything is going on well? At that point, Tumul will surely start. This is when the party feels safe. Rav Schwab party feels safe. It's the Gemara and Sanhedrin, Dapsadi, Zayin, and Aleph. If you have a government that's like that, then you know that everything is about to end. That Mashiach has to come. Because there's nothing left. They have no Yunika from Dara. There's nothing left by them. That's the idea behind it. So that's why you got to hope that all the religious coalition will get kicked out of the government. That way, it'll be Kulo Afak Lavan, Taru. That'll be the type of idea of where it's so totally destroyed, so totally tameh, there's no way that we can survive with this. It has to be that Mashiach will come right now. Because the absence of Tuma will create Tahara. We'll stop with that, guys. Have a great Shabbat. Just a summary. Why is the lettuce tameh? Because she has no Akaras Atov. Why don't we have Saras nowadays? We gave a bunch of answers in the Hasidish answer with your davening. And Kulu Afak Lavan is the absence of Tuma or Hachna brings the Tahara. Right, guys. Have a good Shabbat. Yeah.